It is safe to say many of us live much of our lives online. Where grandma may have had precious old letters tucked into a trunk, we have emails stored on servers or in the cloud. Maybe mom had her photo albums or boxes stuffed with priceless photos in the basement. We have our photos stored on Flickr. What happens to all of that when we die? Michigan Radio social media producer Kimberly Springer is with us now. You know, Kimberly, we don't really think about it, do we, as we're piling up our photos and our documents and accessing our banks online and storing our emails. What's the price we pay for not planning ahead for the day that we're not logging on anymore?
Exactly. I mean, I'm also an archivist, so the whole social media network just makes me very nervous in terms of where people are storing things, how they're labeling them, what's going to happen to them when we can no longer access them. Because none of this lasts forever, but we don't know exactly how long these different forms of media will last.
What are the biggest mistakes you see?
One thing I think is a mistake is trusting all of your precious memories to third-party platforms. I mean, Flickr, Instagram, Facebook. We don't own any of those materials. And even in some of their terms of service, they say that they own the materials once you post them there. So you're losing ownership of your own memories.
So where's the protection then? What steps should we be doing right now as we're living our lives online to protect that? Because that's awful to think that those thousands of pictures of, you know, grandbabies and kids when they're little and your great vacations might not be available after you're gone.
Right. I mean, some people use iCloud service, for example, if you have an iPhone. So it's all going into the cloud. But still, that's on Apple's server. So
that's a third party.
Right. That's a third party. So we have the instance where the celebrity photos were leaked because somebody tapped into those accounts. What personal digital archivists recommend you do is that you have your own hard drive. And a large memory hard drive is very inexpensive these days. They would recommend that you download all of those things to your own personal hard drive and keep that hard drive where you keep all of your other really important documents like your will and the deed to your house and all of those things.
So that's pictures and that's documents. Just what about access to sites? And a lot of people do online banking or people have PayPal that taps directly into your bank account.
Right. Nobody really wants to give away their password to anybody else. And there are services that will keep your passwords for you, and then you can designate somebody who can access those passwords should you die. They would just need to prove that they are a close relative to you and also provide something like an obituary or a certificate of death so that that third-party company would send all of your passwords to them so that you could access the email accounts, the bank accounts, etc.
Can I write it all down, accounts, passwords, put in an envelope and store it with my will?
You could do that. It's not the most secure thing to do, but that's one way around that problem of giving your passwords to anybody else.
That way, perhaps who's ever executor of your will would also get that envelope and everybody understands that that's the person who will be tapping into things.
Right.
It does strike me that there are two sets of problems or challenges, one for me as the Facebook person and the person living my life online and having my photos, but then the other for my survivors who can be terribly frustrated trying to figure out rules of usage. And because I remember a few years ago, there was a father who sued Yahoo when his son was killed in Iraq. He wanted to get access to his son's emails. Mm-hmm. And Yahoo said, absolutely not. I don't care if you're the father. No one else except the original account. And he had to go to court to fight it.
Right.
And I don't think any of us are thinking about that when we were deciding, well, I'll use Gmail or I'll use whatever.
Right. It's not until these things happen that we think, oh, how am I going to get access? But I think that as we get further along in our digital culture, companies like Yahoo and Gmail are putting in safeguards for us to be able to access the materials of people who are deceased. So if you look on, if you just, for example, Google Facebook and memorialize webpage, you will come up with the instructions for how to either turn somebody's Facebook page off, deactivate it, and also how to, for example, access Gmail.
Yeah, because I'm guessing they're all helter-skelter as far as the policies. There's no unified way of approaching this problem of survivors wanting access.
Right. The requirements are slightly different with each service. So usually they might require an obituary or a death certificate, but they might also require, for example, Gmail. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to access somebody's Gmail, they would want your driver's license and your proof of identity. So they're trying to maintain privacy, but also give people the access they need.
You touched on something I wanted to get your thoughts on as well. You talked about the Facebook memorial page. And I got to imagine there are challenges and opportunities that social media offers when someone we love and care about dies. And case in point, I just checked this morning on Facebook, and my friend Brother Vince, he was a wonderful Capuchin friar at the Capuchin Soup Kitchen, a dear friend, and he's been gone since June 2010. But the page is still going, and I noticed somebody checked in recently and written to him. Mm-hmm. So there's that, and that can be a comfort. But then what if you have family members who are private and hate having things splashed out on Facebook? And I bet you could see problems within families.
Yeah, I think of it as almost a roadside memorial where people can come and leave flowers and leave memories. And Facebook is an interesting example because of all of the different ways in which the page can be kept alive. It's my understanding that the privacy settings on Facebook will remain the same as when the person died. A close relative could get permission to deactivate the page, but the page is still there. If the person allowed for other people to post to their wall, they'll still be able to do that. If you want to send a private message to them, you can do that.
Deactivate the page, but it doesn't mean the page doesn't exist.
Right. They don't take the page down because that's part of Facebook's bread and butter, that personal information and that personal data.
Interesting. So even if I deactivated my own page today, it's still there.
Right. It's still in the ether.
Which leaves us to that issue of editing our online presence through our lives, how important that is.
Mm-hmm. You're a brand in that way. We don't like to think of ourselves as a brand or a product, but with free services, you are the product because they're gathering information that they can then sell on. So while they're providing a service and links and connections to people, they're still a business.
Oh, very interesting. Kimberly Springer is Michigan Radio's social media producer. Good thoughts on ways to kind of avoid extra heartache after I pass. Thanks, Kimberly.
Thank you.